Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, everyone. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 021, 3/13/2013. Uh-oh, look out. It's a bunch of threes. All right, let's roll into article number one. Obama has failed to live up to previous statements about marijuana decriminalization. There it is, B. Take it away.
Obama has failed to live up to previous statements about marijuana decriminalization. By Matthew Rosa. Source, PolicyMic.com. The marijuana editorial you are about to read begins with a recent speech by Ron Paul and ends with a tongue-lashing penned more than a century ago by a presidential prostitute. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Last Friday, former Congressman Paul R. Texas spoke to a gathering of prominent Canadian conservatives to declare that the drug war needs to be repealed. Reading his remarks, one might have been reminded of the words of another idealistic legislator 9 years earlier. In terms of legalization of drugs, I think, the war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws, but I am not somebody who believes in legalization of marijuana. What I do believe is that we need to rethink how we are operating in the drug wars, and I think that currently, we are not doing a good job. Unlike Paul, that statesman, a then obscure state senator from Illinois named Barack Obama, was destined to acquire real political power, one that he has sadly failed to use to fulfill the promise of his statement from 2004. To understand why that has happened, one can turn to Congressman Jared Polis D. Colorado, who earlier this year introduced H.R. 499, a House bill to end the federal ban on marijuana, and was asked a few weeks later which special interest groups were most effective in blocking progress on the measure. As he candidly explained, the law enforcement industrial complex. All those on the gravy train of the drug war, which means parts of law enforcement and their private sector vendors. The term law enforcement industrial complex can't be emphasized enough. In addition to the multitude of law enforcement agencies which directly or indirectly depend on the drug war to keep personnel on the payrolls, receive large financial allocations in state and or federal budgets, and even continue to exist at all, viz., the Drug Enforcement Agency, a large and growing number of American prisons are contracted out to private, for-profit businesses, creating a $70 billion industry in the process. Since the financial success of these companies depends on cheaply housing as many inmates as possible, they naturally have a vested interest in maintaining and, when possible, strengthening our current drug laws. As laid out in the annual report of the Corrections Corporation of America, the largest of these firms, their growth could be adversely affected by the relaxation of enforcement efforts, leniency in conviction and sentencing practices, or through the decriminalization of certain activities that are currently proscribed by our criminal laws. For instance, any changes with respect to drugs and controlled substances or illegal immigration could affect the number of persons arrested, convicted, and sentenced, thereby potentially reducing demand for correctional facilities to house them. The human and financial toll of the federal ban on marijuana is, quite literally, inestimable. Our most recent statistics on the total number of inmates incarcerated for specifically pot-related offenses date back to 2004. At that time, more than 44,000 people were in state or federal prison for marijuana crimes, 1/8 of the total number of incarcerated drug offenders, and even that figure failed to incorporate any data on the more than 700,000 inmates at local jails. By the beginning of this decade, roughly 6,200 people were being sent to jail each year for growing, trafficking, or possessing marijuana, while over 750,000 arrests were occurring annually for simple possession, as compared to the less than 650,000 made due to violent crimes. The total cost of this anti-marijuana crusade was, at least back when it was last tabulated in 2004, more than $1 billion. While some of this could be at least hypothetically justified if marijuana posed a serious threat to public health and safety, neither claim holds up to either empirical analysis or jurisprudential scrutiny. Only 7.3% of federal imprisoned marijuana offenders committed their crimes with a weapon, ranking as the least likely of any drug offenders to have used guns while breaking the law. In fact, the existing evidence shows no meaningful correlation between marijuana use and violent crime, with aggressive marijuana users usually being people who had violent histories before their relationship with the drug. Even studies focused on comparing the criminological predictive effects of alcohol, cocaine, and marijuana have determined that, of the three, only alcohol and cocaine use appear to play a significant role in explaining violence. Likewise, studies have repeatedly found that marijuana is no more unhealthy and arguably less so than legal drugs like alcohol and tobacco, a point best summed up by the World Health Organization's conclusion that based on existing patterns of use, cannabis poses a much less serious public health problem than is currently posed by alcohol and tobacco in Western societies. Then again, the very notion of having the state regulate what we do to our own bodies goes against the essence of our founding fathers' principles. As Thomas Jefferson put it, the air seems not sufficiently eradicated, that the operations of the mind, as well as the acts of the body, are subject to the coercion of the laws. But our rulers can have authority over such natural rights only as we have submitted to them. The rights of conscience we never submitted, we could not submit. We are answerable for them to our God. The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. This brings us back to President Obama. Although he has so far refrained from using federal law enforcement officials to prosecute recreational marijuana users in Colorado and Washington where it was legalized last year, he has also failed to use his presidential power to even push for decriminalization. The insightful argument he made less than a decade ago has been cast aside, buckling like so many of his other principles under the pressure of the powerful special interest groups that do more to govern our country than its elected officials. Instead, Americans are being left with vague reassurances about an impending national conversation on the subject and half-hearted attempts to find a middle ground. This half-heartedness, as things stand, is practically and morally unacceptable on this issue, practically so because it is insufficient against the enormous power of the law enforcement industrial complex, and morally so because it allows the rights of our citizens and the will of our founding fathers to continue being thwarted. What we need is strong leadership that will have the courage to puncture overinflated fallacies and defy special interest groups that place profit over principle. If Obama fails to show that leadership during his presidency, the same criticism will be made of him as has been made of so many of his predecessors. And it is here that I return to the words of the aforementioned 19th century prostitute, as directed against President Chester Arthur when he began to disgust her with his own wavering principles. Why do you take such comfort in half measures? Does it never strike you that there must be back of them only half a mind, a certain half-heartedness, in fact, only half a man? Why do you not do what you do with your whole soul? Or have you only half of one?
Article number 2. Eric Holder gets an earful on marijuana. Promises quick decision. Yeah, we've been waiting. Take it away, B.
Eric Holder gets an earful on marijuana. Promises quick decision. By Rob Hodokane on McClatchy Newspapers. Source, SanLuisObispo.com. Attorney General Eric Holder is getting plenty of conflicting advice as he tries to figure out how the federal government should respond to the decision by voters in Washington State and Colorado to legalize marijuana for recreational use. The latest came Wednesday from Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who told Holder to focus on prosecuting larger federal crimes as he deals with the fallout of automatic spending cuts ordered by Congress. If you're going to be because of budget cuts prioritizing matters, I would suggest there are more serious things than minor possession of marijuana, but it's a personal view, Leahy told Holder, adding that other states are sure to follow the lead of Washington and Colorado. While Leahy urged leniency, others want Holder to use his job as the nation's top law enforcement official to get tough with states that want to ignore federal drug laws. On Tuesday, 8 former Drug Enforcement Administration chiefs said the Obama administration should move aggressively to nullify the state legalization laws. And on the same day, a United Nations agency said the United States would be violating international drug treaties by allowing the state laws to stand. Holder told senators that he's reviewing the state's new laws and plans a quick decision after having already met with governors of both states. "We've had good communication. I expect that we will have an ability to announce what our policy is going to be relatively soon," Holder said. With the state and federal laws clearly at odds, Holder is sure to face heat no matter what he decides. And so far, he has given little public indication of what he will do. Marijuana advocates, however, are hoping that Holder's boss, President Barack Obama, is on their side. When the president was asked about the new state laws in an interview with ABC's Barbara Walters in December, Obama suggested that the federal government would be unlikely to take a hard line, saying, "We've got bigger fish to fry." As both Washington and Colorado continue with their plans to open marijuana dispensaries later this year, the legalization issue promises to get more attention on Capitol Hill in coming weeks. Leahy announced earlier that he wants his committee to conduct a hearing into the differences among state and federal laws governing marijuana. He said he wants to make sure that state laws are respected and that state officials in Washington and Colorado who are charged with the licensing of marijuana retailers will not face federal criminal penalties. Under federal law, marijuana remains a controlled substance, and possession or distribution of the drug is a criminal offense that can result in prison time. In December, Leahy wrote a letter to the White House's Office of National Drug Control Policy, saying that his committee had a significant interest in the issue and that Congress could act to end the uncertainty facing residents in Washington and Colorado. As one option, Leahy said, the Federal Controlled Substances Act could be changed to allow for the possession of up to an ounce of marijuana, at least in places where it's already legal under state law. In the House, two bills were introduced last month that would end the federal prohibition against marijuana and create new regulatory systems to deal with its legalization. One, sponsored by Democratic Republican Jared Polis of Colorado, would remove marijuana from the list of controlled substances and allow it to be regulated much like alcohol at the federal level. The second, sponsored by Democratic Republican Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, would create a federal excise tax on the sale of marijuana.
Thanks, B. Article number 3. Former DEA chiefs call on Obama to crack down on cannabis legalization. There it is, B. Take it away.
Former DEA chiefs call on Obama to crack down on cannabis legalization. Attorney General to announce response to Washington and Colorado resolutions as UN joins call to shut down legalization. By Ed Pilkington in New York. Source: Guardian.co.uk. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is preparing to announce his response to the decision of voters in Colorado and Washington state to legalize cannabis, as the Obama administration comes under mounting pressure within the U.S. and around the world to stop the creeping legalization of the drug. Holder has let it be known that his review into last November's vote in the two states to legalize marijuana is coming to an end, and that he will make an announcement of his official response soon. Some observers expect that to be as early as Wednesday, when the country's top law officer faces questioning from the Senate Judiciary Committee in Washington, D.C. As Holder completes his legal review of developments in Colorado and Washington state, eight former heads of the Drug Enforcement Administration DEA, the federal body tasked with clamping down on illegal drug use, urged Obama to act quickly to bring the states into line. Cannabis use remains banned under federal law, which pits the Obama administration against the two states whose voters opted to allow the drug for recreational use. In a letter, the six former DEA chiefs, who worked under a succession of both Democratic and Republican presidents, urged the Department of Justice to move swiftly to squash the Colorado and Washington reforms. If they don't act now, these laws will be fully implemented in a matter of months, one of the six, Peter Bensinger, told the Associated Press. The U.S. government also came under pressure internationally, with a UN body, the International Narcotics Control Board (INCB), warning that creeping decriminalization and legalization moves in American states were violating international drug conventions. But the authors of the Colorado and Washington legalization laws defended the reforms and said they should be allowed to move ahead. Brian Vicente, co-author of the Colorado law, said his community had sent a message around the world, You have two states revolting and they're saying it doesn't work in their states, he told the Seattle Times. Allison Holcomb of the ACLU, who wrote Washington's Law, said the DEA chiefs were just stuck in the past. They're not raising new issues. They're arguing we need to stick with the status quo. An indication of the kind of issue that is likely to alarm federal law enforcers is the discussion that happened in Colorado on Tuesday among members of the state's task force empowered with regulating the use of marijuana once liberalization comes in. The panel recommended that tourists from other states and countries should be allowed to come to Colorado and buy and smoke cannabis freely under the reforms, though the amount they would be allowed to purchase in any one go might be limited to an eighth of an ounce.
Article number 4. UN warns America, legalizing marijuana violates international law. Take it away, B.
UN warns America, legalizing marijuana violates international law. By Cheryl K. Chumley, The Washington Times. Source, WashingtonTimes.com. The United Nations has issued the United States a stern warning against a state trend to legalize marijuana, for recreational or medical use. Doing so violates international law. The International Narcotics Control Board, the global body in charge of overseeing drug treaties, issued a warning about the unprecedented surge in legal highs those that stem from medically approved marijuana use and said immediate action is needed to stop the trade, The Guardian reported. The group also warned the U.S. government to crack down on medicinal marijuana laws. In some U.S. states, they are being operated in a way that is completely inappropriate and outside of the treaties, INCB said, in its just-released report. The INCB, an offshoot of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, had a special criticism for Colorado and Washington, where marijuana can be used for recreation. They also undermine the humanitarian aims of the drug control system and are a threat to public health and well-being, said Raymond Yans, INCB president, The Guardian reports. 18 U.S. states have medical marijuana laws, The Guardian says. Those laws are little more than a backdoor to legalization for recreational use, Mr. Yen said.
Article number 5. Criminalizing marijuana use violates fundamental rights.
Criminalizing marijuana use violates fundamental rights. By Mike D. Source, Montana Standard, MTStandard.com. Chris Williams' defense was Montana's Medical Marijuana Act. Whose fault was it that he does not know what his basic fundamental rights are as he heads off to prison for political reasons? Marijuana remains illegal because the judiciary has determined the constitutionality of marijuana laws by rational basis. Rational basis is used when no fundamental rights have been declared injured by the defendant from enforcement of the law. Since 1965, 22 million plus people in the United States have been arrested or summoned to court for violating marijuana laws. That's 22 million people who had standing to question whether marijuana laws are reasonable. We have been deprived of our fundamental rights to liberty and property by the enforcement of the marijuana laws. Why has this fact been ignored by the lawyers from the American Civil Liberties Union, NORML, etc.? Criminal laws present a justifiable controversy under Article 3 of the Constitution because of actual injury to fundamental rights. Being arrested and going to prison is deprivation of liberty. Due process of law requires the deprivation of fundamental rights to be justified by a compelling state interest to use state police power. Police power is reasonable and necessary when it is used to protect public safety. Criminalizing marijuana is unreasonable and unnecessary, because the private use of marijuana does not threaten the rights of others. There is no victim of a crime. The rights of marijuana users to be secure in their persons, houses, papers and effects from unreasonable searches and seizures has been violated. Marijuana users have been deprived of life, liberty and property without due process of law. Rational review of criminal laws is deprivation of rights under the color of law. Does Mr. Williams' lawyer believe he is a non-person and not entitled to equal protection of the Fourth and Fifth Amendments? Try declaratory judgment, Chris. Just make sure you claim the law deprived you of your right to liberty to question the reasonableness of the marijuana laws you were convicted of.
Article number 6. Legal marijuana will reduce crime, Seattle Mayor McGrin declares. Take it away, B.
Legal marijuana will reduce crime, Seattle Mayor McGinn declares. By Jake Ellison. Source, SeattlePI.com. Will legal marijuana reduce crime? That's still an open question because neither Washington nor Colorado, which is also in the process of making legal pot available, has fully permitted legal marijuana to buy and to hold. So, the jury is still out. Nevertheless, in his 2013 State of the City address, Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn stated flatly, "Look at marijuana legalization. We are now going to see businesses fighting for market share, instead of gangs fighting for turf. That will reduce crime, and reduce incarceration of our youth. That's positive change." That echoes what McGinn had stated in his 2012 address that got a lot of national attention prior to Washington voters approving legal marijuana. It is time we were honest about the problems we face with the drug trade. Drugs are a source of criminal profit, and that has led to shootings and even murders. Just like we learned in the 1920s with the prohibition of alcohol, prohibition of marijuana is fueling violent activity. We also know today that the drug war fuels a biased incarceration policy. The drug war's victims are predominantly young men of color. Seattle is the kind of place that isn't afraid to try a different approach. We support safe access to medical marijuana and made enforcement of possession of marijuana for personal purposes our lowest enforcement priority. But we've learned in the past year that with the federal war on drugs still intact, and with our kids still getting gunned down on the streets, we need to do more. I know every one of the city council members sitting to my left and right believe as I do, it's time for the state to legalize marijuana, and stop the violence, stop the incarceration, stop the erosion of civil liberties, and urge the federal government to stop the failed war on drugs. His sentiment has been echoed by sponsors of Initiative 502, which legalizes possession of up to an ounce of pot and puts the Washington State Liquor Control Board in charge of making legal pot available. Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes has said in many places that legal marijuana will be the best tool law enforcement has in the war on drugs. He told me at KPLU last year, "The main purpose of I-502 is to use, for the first time, economic weapons to undercut that black market selling marijuana. The only thing prohibition really accomplishes is to give the criminals a monopoly on supplying marijuana, so we want to take that monopoly away from them. But has it worked anywhere else? There are not a lot of places in the world where marijuana and other illicit drugs have been made essentially legal, but Portugal is one such country. In 2001, Portugal reduced the use and possession of drugs that have not been prescribed or otherwise authorized from a criminal offense to an administrative offense, or, put another way, jail time was replaced with the offer of therapy, which can be refused without penalty. Time reported in 2009. Compared to the European Union and the US, Portugal's drug use numbers are impressive. Following decriminalization, Portugal had the lowest rate of lifetime marijuana use in people over 15 in the EU, 10%. The most comparable figure in America is in people over 12, 39.8%. Proportionally, more Americans have used cocaine than Portuguese have used marijuana. The Cato paper reports that between 2001 and 2006 in just Portugal, rates of lifetime use of any illegal drug among 7th through 9th graders fell from 14.1% to 10.6%. Drug use in older teens also declined. Lifetime heroin use among 16 to 18-year-olds fell from 2.5% to 1.8%, although there was a slight increase in marijuana use in that age group. New HIV infections in drug users fell by 17% between 1999 and 2003, and deaths related to heroin and similar drugs were cut by more than half. In addition, the number of people on methadone and buprenorphine treatment for drug addiction rose to 14,877 from 6,040, after decriminalization, and money saved on enforcement allowed for increased funding of drug-free treatment as well. Of course, the counter to this approach by Washington's new marijuana laws has been that the state will not be able to sell the drug at a low enough price to effectively counter the black market prices. But one has to wonder if a couple more bucks at a clean, well-lit, official pot seller store might be enticing enough. Another big question that will likely remain unresolved for some time is how the burgeoning medical marijuana industry will fit in. Already, there is a move afoot in Olympia to tax medical marijuana sales. And if it isn't taxed, then the state-licensed stores will be at a disadvantage, price-wise. But does that matter?
Article number 7. Hemp, a common sense crop for America's common good.
Hightower, Hemp, a common sense crop for America's common good. By Jim Hightower. Source, LubbockOnline.com. 4 years ago, Michelle Obama picked up a shovel and made a powerful symbolic statement about America's food and farm future. She turned a patch of White House lawn into a working organic garden. That was a great move, earning kudos from just about everyone this side of Monsanto and the pesticide lobby. But now, as she begins another 4 years in the People's Mansion, the First Lady is probably asking herself, how can I top that? What can I do this time around to plant a crop of common sense in our country's political soil that will link America's farmers, consumers, environment and grassroots economy into one big harvest of common good? Thanks for asking, Ms. Obama, and please allow me to intrude into your thoughts with a one-word suggestion, hemp. Plant a good, healthy stand of industrial hemp next to your organic garden. This would, of course, drive the anti-drug zealots up the wall, a good place for them, I think. Holy J. Edgar Hoover, they'd scream, hemp is a distant cousin of marijuana. Well, yes, but the industrial variety of cannabis lacks the psychoactive aspects of pot, so their hysteria is misplaced. Industrial hemp won't make anyone high, but it certainly can make us happy because it would deliver a new economic and environmental high for America. Plus, hemp production is firmly rooted in American history. Question, besides being founders of our republic, what did Thomas Jefferson and George Washington have in common? Answer, both farmed hemp. Most of America's founders were strong promoters of this extraordinarily useful agricultural crop, with Jefferson declaring it to be a first necessity to the wealth and protection of the country. The first draft of our Constitution was written on hemp paper. Old Ironsides was powered by sales of hemp cloth. As late as World War II, the government urgently pushed farmers to grow the crop as part of a Hemp for Victory program. So why are American farmers today prohibited from producing this patriotic, profitable, pesticide-free plant? Political nuttiness. Most recently, in a frenzy of reefer madness, U.S. drug police decided that President Dick Nixon's Controlled Substance Act of 1970 not only outlawed marijuana, but also its non-narcotic cousin, industrial hemp. If ignorance is bliss, they must have been ecstatic, yet their nuttiness remains the law of our land today. While our nation is the world's biggest consumer of hemp products from rope to shampoo, building materials to food, the mad masters of our insane drug war have lumped hemp and marijuana together as Schedule I controlled substances, making our land of the free the world's only industrialized country that bans farmers from growing this benign, profitable and environmentally beneficial plant. Thus, the USA is consuming millions of dollars worth of products made from hemp, that hemp comes from producers in other countries, because our farmers aren't allowed to grow it in the USA and reap the economic benefits here at home. The good news, though, is a wave of sanity is now wafting across America. In Colorado, for example, farmer Michael Bowman and Denver hemp advocate Linda Parker helped pass Amendment 64 in last fall's election. While it legalizes personal pot use, which got all the media attention, it also directs the legislature to set up a program for the cultivation, processing and sale of industrial hemp. Bowman now hopes to be the first American farmer in generations to plant a legal crop of it. Appropriately enough, he hopes to do so on April 30th. Even red states like Kentucky are on the move. Its Republican Ag Commissioner, backed by its Chamber of Commerce, is campaigning to legalize hemp farming there, and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is co-sponsoring a national bill with Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden to take hemp off the controlled substance list.
Article number 8. Medical marijuana unemployment benefits okay for qualified Michigan patients. Judge says. Take it away, B.
Medical marijuana unemployment benefits okay for qualified Michigan patients, judge says. By David Sands. Source, HuffingtonPost.com. It's no fun getting fired, but at least Michigan medical marijuana patients can for state-approved pot use can still look forward to unemployment benefits. Ingham County Circuit Judge William Collette decided Tuesday that a state medical marijuana patient who got laid off for using the herb could qualify for jobless benefits, overruling a state commission, the Lansing Journal reports. The judge made a well-reasoned decision. Matthew Abel, an attorney with the Cannabis Council law firm and the executive director of Michigan Normal National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, told the Huffington Post in an email. Even if the state appeals, it is likely to stand. The Michigan Medical Marijuana Act of 2008 makes it legal for patients suffering from a number of ailments like cancer to use the substance as a medication, but they need to have legitimate certification from a doctor. In August of 2012, the Michigan Compensation Appellate Commission ruled that the MMMA does not offer any employment protection to cardholders and does not regulate private employment, according to court documents provided by the Lansing State Journal. The trial revolved around the 2011 firing of Jenan Kemp, who had worked as a CAT scan technician and handled IVs at Hayes Green Beach Memorial Hospital in Charlotte, Mitch. Kemp, who suffers from neuropathy and lupus and is a valid state medical marijuana patient, was let go after a patient complained she had spoken about using marijuana. After the complaint, Kemp notified her employer she was a marijuana patient, but subsequently failed a drug test and was fired. Disqualification from unemployment benefits for use of medical marijuana in conformity with the MMMA would amount to an impermissible penalty and be contrary to law, Collette wrote in his court opinion. He added that the state unemployment agency's guidelines say applicants should not be rejected for jobless benefits unless they're in possession of marijuana while at work, under the influence of marijuana while at work or using marijuana while at work, and that Kemp did not fall within any of these categories. However, employers are allowed to fire medical marijuana users under state law. In a September case, Michigan Appeals Court upheld a judge's decision that Walmart employee Joseph Casillas, a medical marijuana patient who suffers from an inoperable tumor and cancer, was not wrongfully fired when he was let go because of his pot use. In another recent ruling, Michigan's Supreme Court decided that medical marijuana dispensaries aren't allowed under the MMMA, but the State House is currently considering legislation that would permit the establishment and regulation of dispensaries. 18 states and the District of Columbia currently allow the medicinal use of marijuana.
All right, B, for the last story of the day. Is your marijuana a tequila shot or a Merlot? Take it away, B.
Is your marijuana a tequila shot or a Merlot? By Robert Fichtel, Bloomberg News. Source, DenverPost.com. If you're inclined to have an alcoholic beverage on occasion, I suspect that you don't simply go into a restaurant or bar and say give me a drink, not knowing whether you're going to get a glass of Merlot or a shot of tequila. As an informed consumer, you're likely to know that those two options are very different in appearance, taste, smell and alcohol content. We order a drink that's specific to the experience we want. Something similar might be said of the fruits and vegetables we eat. We can buy organic products, helping us eliminate some or all of the pesticides and inorganic fertilizers that may be used to grow these foods. It's not so simple for a cannabis patient in the 18 states plus the U.S. Capitol where marijuana is legal for medical purposes, or in Colorado and Washington, where marijuana has been approved for recreational use. The consumer is left either uninformed or, at best, with anecdotal information. Standards and industry benchmarks don't exist. With marijuana, you don't really know what you're going to get. Yet there are some things we know. Modern growing techniques and available cannabis strains are yielding more potent marijuana today than in years past. Concentrations of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the most widely recognized psychotropic component in marijuana, have increased consistently since the 1970s, when they were on average believed to be about 1%. Today's medical-grade marijuana, which is often available to recreational users, has THC concentrations that average 16% and can reach 24% or higher. There is an argument within the industry that stronger THC concentrations lead consumers to smoke or ingest less cannabis product. This might have the equation backward. I believe it's more likely that overconsumption occurs, and possibly before consumers know they have exceeded their comfort level. This is one reason that formal quality guidelines and labeling are needed. Some, but not all, states require oversight of commercial growers, monitoring production quantities and security of the plants and related equipment. But the focus is on how much marijuana is being cultivated and whether the facilities are safe and won't be an easy target for thieves. There are few rules for how a plant is grown, what fertilizers are used or what pesticides are sprayed on the plants. And though many growers are very prudent about how they raise their crops to ensure safe cannabis, not all are so careful. Some let the profit incentive override safety concerns. Here's an example of what can happen in the absence of strict monitoring of production techniques. Say a grower winds up with an infestation of spider mites, a common pest that can cause severe damage to household plants and marijuana, too. The grower may well spray the plants with a chemical pesticide that can stay on leaf surfaces through harvest and consumption. Because cannabis is usually smoked as a method of ingestion, any residual pesticide will be taken directly into the consumer's lungs, which may be dangerous. In November, Colorado voters backed the legalization of recreational marijuana use. The law's tagline was, "Regulate marijuana like alcohol." This was an easy way to explain to voters that marijuana would be sold much like alcohol, through designated stores and only to those older than 21. The stores would be licensed and monitored by the state, and marijuana would be properly labeled. Washington State's law was approved with a similar proviso. It isn't yet clear what information labels should show. Focus groups, involving industry participants, government officials and the public, are still working on promulgating rules. The marijuana industry, both medical and recreational, needs to develop production standards concerning pesticides and chemicals and appropriate disclosure on the labels. Warnings should be included about driving or operating machinery and that use by those younger than 21 is illegal. The industry should also create a simple grading system that shows THC potency. It probably wouldn't need to be as specific as the alcohol content labels on most beverages, but perhaps based on a scale of light, medium, heavy and extra heavy. That way a consumer will be less likely to exceed his or her limit. Robert Fichtel is managing partner of the Medical Marijuana Business Exchange.
All right, thanks, listeners. That's all I have for this week. Till next time, have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world.